Miss Yeo Wan Ling.
Mr. Speaker, I seek your permission to take the following six questions, 19 to 24, together. There are a total of 18 parliamentary questions filed on rail reliability for this week's sittings. For today, I will respond on this issue more generally before addressing the specific incidents that members have asked about. And thereafter, I invite members who have filed questions for this, as well as future sittings, to seek clarifications and, if sufficiently addressed, members may wish to withdraw their questions filed for subsequent sittings. Mr. Speaker, sir.
Please proceed.
Thank you. Let me begin. Ms. Tin Pei Ling and Mr. Yip Hon Wing have noted that our rail reliability as measured by mean kilometres between failure or MKBF is at its lowest since 2020. In 2017, then Minister for Transport, Mr. Khaw Boon Wan, set an NKBF target of 1 million train kilometres between delays exceeding 5 minutes. We surpassed this target in 2019 and we have remained above it ever since. This number for the 12-month period leading up to August 2025 is approximately 1.7 million train km, and this is lower than our peak MKBF of over 2 million in 2022 and 2023, but still higher than the 1 million target. Mr. Cheryl Taha asked how our MKBF compares internationally. Using MKBF and other indicators where comparisons are available, our MRT remains one of the most reliable in the world. Singapore's MKBF in recent years is higher than Hong Kong MTRs, though lower than Taipei Metro's. For the number of service delays exceeding 30 minutes per million train kilometres, our MRT performs about the same as metros in Tokyo and other Japanese cities. I've asked LTA to publish these comparisons regularly because Singaporeans often compare our MRT to these systems. Our journey to achieve 1 million train kilometres was by no means easy. It was the result of years of hard work by thousands of people, including many engineers, technicians, and service staff, who work day and night to keep our train services running. I want to thank Ms. Yeo Wan Ling for asking about the work hours, the safety and well-being of our rail workers, many of whom are Singaporeans. Rail operators are required to ensure that workers maintain appropriate rest periods and there are strict controls to prevent excessive overtime. And I assure Ms. Yeo that we take the safety and the well-being of our rail transport workers very seriously. And I myself have personally visited workers often since I became Transport Minister. They are part of my One Transport team, and I'm committed to taking good care of them. Should we set an even higher target for MKBF? Mr. Shario asked this. Is a reasonable question, but beyond 1 million train kilometres, actually variations in the MKBF become less meaningful. And this is because the number of disruptions per year are very small. Let me give you an example. For the downtown line, the maximum MKBF is about 8 million train kilometres. It achieved it in 2023 and 2024, but just one additional delay halved it to 4 million. Another drawback of the MKBF indicator is that it does not really measure the length of the disruption and hence the impact on the commuter. For example, a complete service stoppage is treated the same as more frequent minor incidents, even when trains are moving and passengers are able to carry on with their journeys. The LTA does consider commuter impact in the financial penalties that are imposed on operators for serious disruptions. And to Mr. Louis Chua's question, LTA has imposed an average of around 4 such penalties per year in the past 5 years. We also use other measures to track the performance of our rail network. Some of these are published, such as the delays more than 30 minutes, which I mentioned earlier. And there are other indicators such as the punctuality of trains reaching each terminus station and the proportion of scheduled mileage travelled by revenue trains. And LTA tracks these too. I've asked LTA to share more of such data publicly, even though they are fairly technical, so that interested commuters and colleagues can have a better and fuller picture of our performance. We will be transparent because we have a good system and we have nothing to hide. I want to assure members that I take every single rail incident very seriously. I'm personally alerted whenever there is a train incident, even when it's late into the night or during engineering hours. And we want to be accountable to commuters because this means that when an incident happens, we will learn from it, we will do our utmost to prevent similar faults from recurring. And accountability is also why I asked LTA last Friday to put out the whole list of incidents that have happened since July this year with our assessment on the causes and how these problems were or are being resolved. As members have also asked questions on specific incidents, I will cover this very briefly in the interest of time and invite members to ask, or rather to invite members to refer to LTA's news release last Friday for further details. Ms. Yeo, Ms. Poli San, Mr. Ng Chi Meng, and Associate Professor James Lim asked about breakdowns for the Northeast Line and the Sengkang Punggol LRT in August. As LTA had explained, two faults occurred at a substation at Sengkang Depot on 12th of August, which cut off power to several parts of the Northeast Line and the SPLRT. Works to repair the damage commenced that night. Unfortunately, before the repair could be completed, a damaged cable caused a separate power fault on the LRT 3 days later. Ms. Poh asked why it took a longer time to recover service on the LRT on the 12th of August, and this was because LTA and SBST had to take some time to determine that it was fully safe for the power to be turned on. The root cause of these faults are still being investigated. The faulty components have been sent to the manufacturer for checks, and LTA is also investigating whether there were any lapses in maintenance. And if so, this will result in regulatory action. I want to also assure members that immediate action has been taken to avoid a recurrence. LTA and SBST have tested cables along the entire SPLRT network and will replace all voltage transformer panels across the Northeast Line intake substations. And we have already planned to install a secondary power supply source at Sengkang LRT Depot by the end of this year, which will provide further redundancy. Mr. Edward Chia and Mr. Liang Eng Hua asked about our findings on the two Bukit Panjang LRT incidents in July. We have traced both incidents to a malfunctioning network switch. As the switch was intermittently functioning, the defect was only discovered after the second incident. Mr. Liang asked if the disruption could have been avoided. As the network switch was well within its design life, the malfunction unfortunately was not anticipated, but this defective switch has been replaced and sent to the manufacturer for investigation. LTA and SMRT have also put in additional measures to detect such network instability in the future and enable the power system to automatically recover in such instances. Mr. Jackson Lam and Ms. Rachel Ong asked about incidents on the North-South and the East-West lines. The incident on the East-West line on the morning of 6th of August was caused by a faulty point machine near Jurong East Station, one of our busiest stations. Point machines physically move the rails so that trains can transfer from one track to another. And therefore, for safety reasons, train had to be slowed down until after the morning peak when the point machine could be fixed. And this resulted in more crowding than usual during the morning peak hours. Mr. Lam asked about maintenance regime for point machines and whether we could have picked up the fault earlier. Operators do carry out periodic inspections and comprehensive regular overhaul, including functional tests as per industry best practices. Unfortunately, the fault on 6th of August was detected just before the start of service, and could not be resolved by the morning peak. On the separate incident on the North-South line on 2nd September, this was caused by a stalled train, which had to be physically pushed out to Canberra Station to disembark passengers. The problem was traced to a faulty connector, which has since been replaced. Mr. Jackson Lam also asked about the number of signalling-related disruptions on the North-South line in the past year. There was only one such delay on the 13th of June, where the travelling time between Ang Mo Kio and Choa Chu Kang was extended by 15 minutes and normal service resumed within an hour. These recent incidents happened across different MRT lines with different causes. But we want to take a harder look to satisfy ourselves that there is no systemic problem. And that is why I announced last week that I had tasked the Chief Executive of the Land Transport Authority, Mr. Ng Lang, to chair a rail reliability task force, which will include the CEOs of the two MRT operators, Mr. Nian Hun Ping of SMRT and Mr. Jeffrey Sim of SBST. This task force was focused on three areas. First, it will bring forward the renewal of critical components, especially power supply and signalling for the Northeast Line and the Circle Line. Second, it will jointly conduct audits on the maintenance and operations of critical systems, including maintenance processes as well, and staff training. Third, it will review service recovery processes so that we can better support commuters who are caught in a train disruption. And here, the train operators have been informing commuters of service delays in excess of 10 minutes as required by the LTA. And in response to Mr. Louis Chua's question, the LTA has not had to impose any penalties on this in the last 5 years. But this is still only a basic requirement, and I think we can do better. For instance, commuters should have more precise information on alternative transport routes and additional travel time, depending on their specific location rather than through generic advisories. And they should also be able to get the information at a single centralized location, possibly on a single app, so that they know exactly where to look during a stressful disruption. These things we can improve, as well as physical things like directional signs and officer discretion on the ground, or officer reactions on the ground. Mr. Speaker, the recent disruptions have inconvenienced many commuters. I understand the frustrations, and I want to assure commuters that we are doing our best to improve our performance. We know we can do better because our rail reliability has indeed been better in the last few years. But even with the recent disruptions, our MRT system remains one of the most reliable in the world. Train delays happen in every system, in every city. Our phones, our computers have to be restarted every now and then. Cars will break down too. So will our trains. We want to absolutely minimize disruptions because of the inconvenience to commuters, and we will work doubly hard to do so. But what is equally important is when a disruption inevitably happens, we can support commuters and guide them to continuing their journeys safely with their understanding and cooperation. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Ms. Yeo Wan Ling.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. While we wait for the assessment from the LTA and the Rail Reliability Task Force, I note that the SPLRT reliability is being closely monitored, and our transport and maintenance workers are working hard to maintain high reliability for our commuters. With an aging infrastructure and higher commuter demands with the new Punggol infrastructure, like the PDD and the SIT coming online, how could the Ministry support and resource our operators better on top of creating redundancy systems, as Minister has updated, to implement safety and condition monitoring systems? How can we also ensure that our workers are equipped with the latest skills and knowledge, especially with the Rail Manpower Development Package that looks into upskilling our workers come to a funding end?
The Minister, Jeffrey Seow.
Thank you, Ms. Yeo, for your question. Mr. Speaker, sir, we have been working very closely with the unions and with the rail operators on making sure that we are not just upgrading the hardware of the systems, but also the software. We want to make sure that the workers who are working on maintaining train reliability are of the right capabilities, of the right skills, and also are able to manage the new systems that are coming on board. As we upgrade the systems with new technology, new capabilities are needed. And that is why the fund that Ms. Yeo mentioned has been very useful for us to support the workers who are then able to deal with these new systems and to maintain them well. The operators also have a rail reliability fund, which we work with them to try to encourage them with incentives to focus on training their workers, building up their capabilities, ensuring that they're able to do the things that they need to do. So all in all, I think there is a collaborative effort. We are working very hard with the support of the unions to make sure that the workforce is capable and can do the things that we need them to do every day, every night. Thank you.
Mr. Leong Eng Hua.
Thank you, sir. I thank the Minister for sharing on the technical details of the breakdown of the BPLRT. We are all now too familiar with the inherent technical challenges that the BPLRT system has. And we do appreciate it does. It's operating in a pretty challenging terrain, ground terrain there in Bukit Panjang. But so in that context, I want to ask the Minister whether LTA will consider adding more buses to run parallel to the BPLRT system as a way to enhance resiliency and also as a measure to cope with the increasing ridership as a town's population is also increasing.
Minister.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you, Mr. Liang, for your question. Indeed, Mr. Liang and I are both very familiar with the ins and outs, literally, of the BPRT. For a number of reasons, we were together working at on transport issues a decade ago, and I have as much vested interest, if not more, since BPRT passes both our constituencies. I want to thank him for his suggestion. The BPRT reliability has generally improved, I think, over the years. It is a unique system. It was retroactively fitted in, unlike the SBRT, which was built from scratch. And over the last 10 years, in fact, we have been working on a systemic upgrade of the LRT, the power system, the trains. We are almost complete, and I think the results are showing the reliability has indeed been better. As for bus services, today there are already several bus services that run parallel to or complement the LRT. For example, I think service 976 was launched in 2019, specifically to support commuters during the renewal works. And together with service 974, these services connect Choa Chu Kang and Bukit Panjang interchanges and serve many of the same neighbourhoods as the LRT. We also have services 920, 922 and 972, which provide alternative connections, first mile, last mile connections within Bukit Panjang. I will certainly review your suggestion to introduce more parallel run bus services, but we'll have to consider other factors like ridership, availability of bus captains, as you know, which is a key constraint for us, as well as to prioritize these relative to requests for bus services in other areas. Thank you.
Mr. Louis Chua.
Thank you, Speaker. Just two SQs for the Minister. The first in relation to the question on the penalties and the incidents. Specifically, I understand that in relation to last year's East-West line breakdown for about 6 days, I think the penalty was reduced from 3 million to 2.4 million. And I wanted to double check because I think specifically on the RTS Act, the operators can be fined a maximum of higher of 1 million or 10% of the fare revenues. And so we with a reduction in the fine, would the minister be concerned that the deterrent effect would actually be lessened as a result? And secondly, the second excuse in relation to the 15 key incidents that the LTA has put out last Friday. For these incidents, I note that the LTA or the government will be putting in an additional $1 billion to raise the reliability and maintenance standards. What is the corresponding requirements on the part of each of the operators in terms of the additional investments that they may have to put in? And at the same time, given the incidents, the ministry's view on the financial penalties that may be imposed. Thank you.
Thank you, Minister.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you, Mr. Chua, for your questions. You have two questions. Let me just take the second one first on the financial penalties and how, what is the responsibility of the PTOs in terms of using the $1 billion and what is their financial commitment. Well, before they do that, I would just sort of briefly explain how the LTA assesses penalties. We assess financial penalties for very serious disruptions, and we do so looking at the culpability of the operators in terms of their contribution to that environment. Sometimes it's not the PTO's doing. Sometimes there are situations where it's human error, or there are people, you know, for example, doing passengers doing things. It's nothing to do with the operators, and they may cause a disruption, but it does not affect the operator, and therefore they're not liable to regulatory action. Insofar as specific incidents, we will look at how the systems that are affected, what is the solution that is required, and if it is a hardware upgrade and it's an asset upgrade, the current system is really a joint process between the LTA and the operator. The LTA, of course, is responsible for asset ownership, in some ways asset renewal as well, and we work closely with the operators on the ground to prioritize some of these things and use the monies accordingly. For your first question, which is related to the penalties and whether or not, with respect to the earlier incident last September, whether the reduction in the penalties would have a deterrent effect, as you pointed out, the penalties are fairly significant. It's, the penalty we have issued is well above the $1 million threshold is higher. We had given them a $3 million penalty, and then we had, after appeal, reduced that penalty to about, I think, believe, $2 million. I think it is a fair decision, that one that we have looked at, looking at, again, the respective responsibilities and culpability of the operator. They have made a case to say there were certain decisions that perhaps were out of their remit. We have looked at their case, and we have decided to reduce the penalties accordingly, and I think it was a reasonable decision. The details of that decision, we can... we have already come out to talk about it. We can give you more information if needed. Thank you.
We are approaching towards the end of question time. I'm going to allow the last three PQs, those who have filed PQs on this. So Ms. Tin, Ms. Bo, and Mr. Ng Chi Ming, starting with Ms. Tin Pei Ling.
Thank you, Minister. I have two supplementary questions. I think the first one is that I think so far reports in the media as well as what have been shared in this House seem to suggest that there has been no observed trends or at least systemic factors causing the recent spate of incidents since July. But it would definitely seem like a really terrible luck for all of these to happen in such a short span of time. Now, with more lines to be added to the system, there will be more assets to be maintained, more manpower, more budget that will be needed. So how will the MOT and PTOs work to assure that our rail performance will continue to be reliable going forward? Second is that given what Minister had shared earlier about the example of how one disruption can greatly reduce the MKBF, achieving of that. So is this still a fair measurement of real reliability? Thank you.
Minister Seo.
I thank Ms. Tin for your questions. I took a look at the number of disruptions for the corresponding period last year. It was about 13 compared to 15 this year. And I was trying to figure out with the same numbers, why is it that there was so much attention this year? And my hypothesis, which I think is true, probably likely, is that the impact of the individual disruptions were far greater than the ones that happened last year. But as Ms. Tin mentioned, actually, as we expand the rail network, and we are in the process of doubling our rail network over 10 years, if we are able to not double the number of train disruptions, actually our rail reliability would have improved. That is not to say we will not put in effort to minimize the number of train disruptions. We will, and we will put in our effort. We will more than double our effort to do so. But this is mathematics. This is reality. I think we have to see what we can do to try our best to improve the standards over time, improve the quality. But this is, it's not possible for us to drive down to zero disruptions. And so therefore, looking at the MKBF, as I mentioned in my speech, it is actually not very meaningful beyond high levels of reliability, not meaningful when you have small numbers, single-digit disruptions. What it does help is just to give a general indicator for two reasons. One, it helps us compare with other systems who also use the same indicator. And two, it helps us track our performance over time. And to that end, as I mentioned in my speech, LTA does track other indicators, and we will put out more of these indicators so that all of us will have a better sense of how our rail performance is. Thank you.
Ms. Polisan.
Thank you, Speaker and Minister. I would like to first commend our PTOs and also LTA for keeping our MKPF to one of the highest in the world. In light of that, I'd like to ask Minister, given under the new rail financing framework, how does LTA ensure that accountability is taken, or rather, how do you ensure that the suppliers are held accountable for the contractual obligations for their train systems availability and also their lifespan? Because at the end of the day, the quality of the train at the point of procurement is really important as well.
Minister.
Thank you, Ms. Poh, for your question. Well, under the new rail financing framework, LTA is responsible for the ownership and renewal of assets. The operators are responsible for maintenance. There's no perfect system. Prior to the new rail financing framework, it was the operators that was responsible for the asset renewal. And there were similar tensions between the regulator and the operator on who should be doing what. And I think what is important is that both the regulator and the operator work together to make sure that we understand the causes of problems in the system, understand how the equipment works, when the equipment should be replaced or repaired, and to be able to do so openly and in a collaborative fashion. And this is what, in fact, we have been doing over the last decade, and this has, in fact, been, I think, the main reason why the rail reliability performance has improved. We will, I think, at the edges have to try to improve the communications and the performance, because the operators are on the ground. They know, they have some experience. They know what they're supposed to do, and they have certain things they are supposed to do. And the regulator, or rather the purchaser, in this case LTA, of the assets, will also have to work with the vendor to make sure that whatever it is, their responsibilities are properly accomplished. During the last few disruptions, I have sat in for the crisis management meetings. The vendors were there. And in some, the cases of some of the vendors, they sit in with our operator. They have an office within the depot or the operation center so that they are able to react more quickly. So it's things like that we'll continue to do to make sure that the vendors are closely involved with what we do. Thank you.
Ms. Ong Chee Meng.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thank the Minister for the clarifications. I'd like to put on public record also my appreciation to LDA, SBSD, and SMRT for the good work on the ground. Two supplementary questions, Minister. One is on the expansion of the rail system and therefore the increasing complexities of maintenance. how would MOT or LTA put in the necessary finances, the necessary engineering time, and equally important, like what my colleague Yovani has asked, the training regimes that would be able to maintain an increased network of complexities to serve the public. On the second SQ, more pertaining to Jalan Kayu, we know that the NEL, the SPRRT, are very congested systems. And while we do the good work to rectify some of the breakdowns, the commuters do face increased inconveniences, especially for Jalan Kayu Fernvale, where the bus connectivity is somewhat lacking. My SQ to the minister is whether LTA would take proactive action to improve the overall connectivity, especially for bus services in Jalan Kayu Fernvale, so that residents can be connected out to other nodes and not, regardless of different improvements, load the NEL. Thank you.
Minister Seo.
Thank Mr. Chi for his question. Maybe I'll take the second one first, because I am very familiar with the Northeast Line. I've taken the Northeast Line since its inception in 2003. In fact, that's the reason why I took my first job. I've seen the Northeast Line grow in capacity and in terms of how it has been performing. I've watched it closely. It is an MRT line that we're watching very closely. As you mentioned, the congestion is one of the highest amongst our, in our MRT network. And we have been looking to see how to alleviate the congestion, as well as really just making sure the reliability is okay so that the impact is not so great, especially during peak hours. The ultimate solution really is to connect the NEL to more train lines. And this is what we're doing, because we're building the cross-island line. I have to try to make sure things are okay for the next 5 years. But I think when the cross-island line connects to Hougang, there will be an opportunity, or it will make the Northeast Line more resilient, because commuters will be able to discharge to some other routes on the train network. In the meantime, we are looking at how to augment the bus network, but buses ultimately are not a good solution, because the capacity of one Northeast Line train is 1,500 people. That is 15 to 20 buses end-to-end, just for one train. And that's not forgetting that each train runs at 2-minute intervals currently at the Northeast Line. So buses will never be a complete substitute, but at the margins, if it can help, we will try to see how we can augment the bus capacity along the Northeast Line corridor. As for how to support the workers in terms of training regimes, finance, and really getting them up to speed on the new sort of systems that are available. As I mentioned earlier in my reply to Ms. Yeo, we have to work very closely with the unions and the operators. I have visited the workers themselves. They not only do the work on a day-to-day basis, they also go for quite a bit of training. And I think whenever they engage in new systems, actually they're quite excited. Hydraulic systems, even things like condition monitoring. These are new things that we have been investing in terms of technology. And in the world, public transport systems don't tend to be highly advanced, because in the world, most public transport systems don't get a lot of investment and money. In Singapore, we have invested a lot of money. The operators are doing a lot of things in terms of maintenance on condition monitoring, which they showcase to other systems and other cities at international rail conferences. So we are doing what we can, and I think there is no shortage of investment on that front. And we will be happy to work with the unions to see whether or not there are other things that we can do to support our workers in upgrading themselves. Thank you.